Okay, good morning, everyone. So today we're going to finish this introduction that Rav Volpe has in this first gate, in this Shaar HaRishon, and he talks about a fascinating phenomenon that we can apply in our lives. Last week we spoke about the first part of the Adam HaShalim, of the person who refines themselves into becoming the type of person that the Ribbono Shel Olam ultimately expects from them. And that person can be a role model for all of us. And we look for those role models. That's what we focused on last week. So today, you have it here on side two. Rav Volpe, after the three stars, he starts on line nine. He says, "Shnei shlavim muchrach adam la'avor ad shehu masig es mataraso." There are two levels that a person has to cross until they accomplish their goal, lahagia lidei madregas hashlemus, to arrive at the level of wholeness. So, what does that mean? He says, at first, we're just going to focus on the first one. He says, "Alav lehikanes latoch olam haTorah." On line 10. A person needs to enter into the world of Torah. Now, in the narrow context, what he's talking about here is about the world of learning for boys who are studying in a yeshiva. But for us, it means the world of Torah, means the world of Torah as a living pursuit. So what does this mean? So he says, His mashal on line 11, which is very powerful, he says, "V'dome mamish," halfway down the line, number 11, this is the key line, "V'dome mamish lehidgaisut latzava." It is like being drafted into the army. Thank you. Being drafted into the army. So that's an important mashal. So first and foremost, there is someone in our lifetime, so to speak, who used this model, and he used it extremely powerfully. Anybody know who may have invoked the idea of the tzava, of tzivos Hashem? That's right. That's right. I think it was the early 1980s that the Lubavitcher Rebbe started a movement called tzivos Hashem, which was like the youth movement of Chabad, and that became a calling card. And that movement, I wonder if you did a longitudinal study on kids who were in Tzivos Hashem in the 80s. You'll remember? There you go. In the 80s and 90s, how many of them are where there was... You didn't have that. So what was the idea? Is that you were part of a movement, part of a mission. This was the Rebbe's army. I think that's how they referred to it. Now this has become an area of interest and research because in the last couple of years, what's his name? Two books came out on the Lubavitcher Rebbe. One was from Rabbi Steinsaltz. The other one was from Telushkin. Yes. So in Telushkin, he talks about the Rebbe's army, about Tzivos Hashem. I think one of them is actually called the Rebbe's army on an earlier book. But think about what it meant for the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Why did he choose that as a vehicle? And think about it on a longitudinal study. If you did a study, how many of those Tzivos Hashem kids are now shluchim in some far-flung place? They had recently was the Kinnah Shluchim at 770, right? Yeah. You saw this? Anybody see pictures?
Yeah. And they just opened the 100th. Place in the world.
It's mind-boggling that this one man, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, single-handedly changed the face of not just world Jewry, but the world. Yeah. And this model of Tzivos Hashem was really a driving factor. Because if you're in the army, so what does that mean? It means you have a mission. So these folks, the young men, some of them now much older, who go out as shluchim of the Rebbe, they go today as shluchim of a Rebbe who died many years ago. They're on a mission. They're willing to make sacrifices. Yeah?
They still are doing that within the Lubavitch schools. They still have the whole, you know, different levels, mm-hmm. You know. So
yep.
It's still an ongoing movement.
It still exists.
Not
yes.
Broadly known.
Yes.
And those kids are going on.
So those families who are going out, especially who go on shlichus, so they have a very strong mission. Mm-hmm. And because they have that strong mission, they're willing to make incredible sacrifices. There was a TV show, I guess, one second, there was a TV show, I don't know if it's still running, that Nechama and I watched called Kathmandu, an Israeli TV show about a Chabad Shliach couple in Nepal. And it was very interesting. I don't know how factual it is, but it's interesting to watch a show about this couple who are living literally in the middle of nowhere in Kathmandu, and what that means. What does it mean to live as a Shliach in Nepal? It's a very interesting show. These people have a tremendous sense of mission and a tremendous sense of commitment. So if the Rebbe, if Rav Volpe is telling us that we need to be serious about our Judaism, we need to get into the in the mindset of signing up for the army. That gives us a certain sense of mission. Yeah.
So I don't want to get too political, but I'm like thinking, you know, there's a whole group of people like in Israel, right, that do not enlist in the, you know, the IDF. Mm-hmm. Wondering if this is like, I don't know,
In the 19... This he wrote in the 1960s.
Okay, because meaning, is this a basis for like the whole, you know, and obviously there are some Haredi people who do serve and there are Haredi units and whatever, but a majority of Haredi people do not enlist. Is this a basis, saying that learning Torah is, I don't know, somehow, you know, comparable to becoming a soldier in the army?
So that's definitely true, that this, the argument that learning Torah, which is rooted in the Gemara, protects a person, and the question of how far you take that, that is definitely at the heart of the question, the halakha question about whether somebody should serve or not, if they would alternatively be studying in yeshiva. Rav Volpe is not going in that direction because he wants to use it as a mashal, which we'll develop in a few minutes. But that definitely is a big piece of it. And then over the last decades, that has become more and more complicated for a whole host of reasons. But when a person is part of an army, so then they have a very clear mission. And they have a very clear sense of commitment. So that is huge. Think about it. How do we view... Rav Volpe is asking us to look in the mirror. How do we view our commitment? Are we really committed the same way that somebody who had committed to a life of service, right? In the old days, in the 40s and 50s, people who served in the military, the expression was that they were in the service. They were in the service. That's what my grandfather served in World War II. That's what it was called. Isn't that what Avodas Hashem is about? Are you in the service of something greater? So do we see that same level of commitment in ourselves? It's a level of commitment. It's a level of passion, of being excited, about taking initiative. A lot of different adjectives, if you think about what it means to be part of an army and what it means to be a good soldier. There's an awesome story that I love. There's an old Hasidic story about a man who was in the Tsar's army. And he was standing at a particular bridge. And his job was to guard this bridge over some little river in the middle of Ukraine somewhere. And it was in the middle of January, and a local regional officer pulled up on a carriage, and he's dressed really warmly because it's the middle of January, and here's this little soldier, this little Russian soldier standing next to the bridge, and he's frostbitten. He's frozen like an icicle. And he's standing there, and he's totally frozen. So the officer pulls over his coach, and he says, "Who are you?" He says, he's like brittle. He says, "I'm an officer in the Tsar's army." So the guy goes back and he calls the military police. And they come to pull this guy over and they take him away and they replace him with somebody else. They take him back to the military police station and they beat him. Okay. They say, "If you were really a Tsar's soldier, you would have been so excited and so fired up about your role in the Tsar's army, you wouldn't have gotten frostbite. So we're going to beat you because you're not excited." But that story tells us a lot. If we are really looking for shleimus, if we're striving for something greater than just mediocre Judaism, then, you know, if we look at ourselves in the mirror and we ask ourselves, is our Judaism alive or is it cold? So if it's frozen to death, so then that's a bad sign. If you're in the army of Hashem, if you're in Tzivos Hashem and your Judaism is frostbitten, so then that's an indication that you're not really excited, you're not really passionate. So this idea, I think, is very powerful, of using the mashal of being a member of an army as a member of the army of Hashem. So he describes how what that means is you have to wear very specific, you know, army dress. Look at line 16. Am Yisrael, the Jewish people, are Nikraim Tzivos Hashem. They are called the army of Hashem. In Parashas Bo. V'zeu mahuso shel Am Yisrael. This is the essence of the Jewish people. Line 17. Tzva Hashem ba'olam. Hanilcham leman ratzon Hashem im kol ha'olam. They are the army of Hashem in the world. They, meaning the Jewish people, who fights on behalf of the will of Hashem in the entire world. Hainu Am Atzmo. Im Atzmo, meaning with the person themselves. Adam Yisrael, line 17. A Jewish person, Hanichnas Lo'ol Mitzvos, who enters into the world of mitzvos, Litzva Hashem Elokei Yisrael Hu Midgayes. He is inducted into the army of Hashem. And therefore, Umeata, Ein Lo Ela Litzayes Lepkudas Elokav. All he has to do is worry about following orders of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and nothing else. Now, how does a person feel? Well, a person who really is successful in their career, if they see themselves as a lifer in the army, as they grow in their army career, they become, you know, decorated in various ways. And a person feels better about themselves as they grow. You know, a career officer doesn't feel like, oh, you know, I cannot believe that I am stuck in this army for my whole life. No, they feel that they're in a mission, so they're serving some great purpose, which is why they've chosen this as a career. It's not because they have no other choices, hopefully. And they become decorated. When you see somebody who is a decorated officer in the army, they feel a tremendous sense. You see this if you talk to them. You say, when you talk to Chayalim, what do they feel a sense of?
Pride.
That's it. One of the things that we struggle with, people sometimes, they're embarrassed about the fact that they're an Orthodox Torah Jew. But it should be exactly the opposite. Nobody who moves up in the ranks in the military feels embarrassed.
But any veteran, you see, like, older men, veterans, are so proud walking around with their medals on their jacket and
their hats.
Older men with their hats and all the different, you know, insignias of the different divisions. You always see, like, soldiers with taking a lot of pride.
Isn't that exactly what Revolbe is telling us? You know, how often is it that we feel that sense of pride? You know, even in my own shalom bayis situation, sometimes we're on the plane. I don't care that I'm going to put on my tallis and tefillin in 24C. What do I care? It's time for shacharis. And then maybe somebody else in my family is like, why do you have to make a scene? Why do you have to put on your tefillin in the middle of the plane? She's like, can't you do this somewhere else? I'm like, what's the big deal? I'm not embarrassed. Why should I be embarrassed? But think about that for a second, right? Isn't that the same thing? People who really view their Yiddishkeit as their service, so they're proud. They're not embarrassed. Why should they be embarrassed? Why should they be ashamed? They should feel good about it. Imagine you met, I don't know, you were on the train somewhere, or you met somebody who had a White House jacket, insignia from the White House. You asked them what they did, and they happened to be a janitor. They were in the janitorial staff in the White House. How would they feel about being a janitor in the White House? They probably feel pretty good. Right? You're not Stam a janitor. You're a janitor in the White House. So if you are really in the service of Hashem, so then when you wear that uniform, meaning when you live that lifestyle of Avodas HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so you shouldn't feel bad about that. You would feel good about that. You'd feel like that's something meaningful. And that's, I think, what this idea brings to us, is that there is a level of commitment, there's a level of passion, and there's a level of pride. People take pride. You know, there's a sense that you belong to something, like you said, especially when you see it with veterans, older folks. It's amazing. So then the question becomes, okay, so let's say we're going to go all into this model that Revolbe tells us that we need to view ourselves as if we are in the service of Hashem. So what does that mean? Zera Volbe says, go back to line 11. I'm going to go back. He says, the end of line 11, he says, Zemechayev levitur al harbe dvarim al harbe ritzonos ishiyim. It requires surrender on many personal interests. So this is where it starts to get harder. You know, to be in Tzivas Hashem and to wave a flag and to go on a parade with Lubavitch kids, that's great. Everyone loves that. No one's going to take it away. But if you're part of an army, then you have to make sacrifices.
Living in Nepal.
Are there Jews in Nepal?
So there are people who come through there. Many of them are Israelis. Israelis are coming through there. So I want to talk about that on two levels. Does this mean, and this is the question I want to get to second, does this mean that we all have to move to Nepal? Does being part of Tzivas Hashem, being part of the Jewish community, being a really inspired Jew mean that? So that's the second question I want to get to. But the first question is, well, how do we handle just the basic sacrifices that it calls for? And that's not an easy thing. In an army, you can't just decide, you know what, I'd like a break today. You know, if you're in Afghanistan, you have to put in for leave. You can't just decide, I'm not going to show up today. So if you're in the Tzivas Hashem, the Ribono Shel Olam, he's the commander-in-chief, and you can't just decide, I'm not going to show up. You know, today I'm not really interested in Avodas Hashem, so I'm going to go downtown and eat at, you know, the Harry Carey's, just because I'm not in the mood today to do the regular things. I'm just going to check out for a day. You can't do that. And that's a sacrifice. You know, I'm not really interested in and fill in the blank of all the other sacrifices that we make. You can't just, you know, if you sign up, you're in it to win it. You can't just say, I'm not in the mood today. So that's a very big deal. And that's a cost that we need to be prepared to look at. And I think we should look at it in two ways, in a balanced way. One is that we should be proud of the fact that we make a lot of sacrifices. There are so many of us who make tremendous life sacrifices, for example, to send children to Jewish day school. Most people could have a nice, very nice, holiday house in Wisconsin on a lake somewhere if you didn't send your kids to day school. We could do that, and we make that sacrifice, and we should recognize and be proud of that sacrifice. But then there are other sacrifices that, you know, maybe we don't think about, and maybe we should think about, and how do we deal with those things? How do we deal with those sacrifices? What about sacrifices that we know that we should make, but we just can't do them? We should do them, but we're not there yet. And everybody has those. So that we can handle, because the first day that you're inducted into the army, you're not expected to be a second lieutenant. You're a private, so first you have to go through training. You go through basic training. No one expects you to be an expert marksman after your first day. Basic training. So all of us are in a process in the army. So some of us are at a different rank and we're growing through this process. So the fact that we haven't made that jump yet, we haven't passed that class, it doesn't mean that we're not in the army. We are. We're just at a different place than we're going to be in a year or in 5 years or in 10 years. We're on the journey. But in addition to those particular sacrifices that we need to consider, if we're making them and how we're making them, well, what about the bigger sacrifices, the lifestyle choices? And this is what Jenny was alluding to. Does being in the Tzivas Hashem, in Revolvi's idea, does that mean that we all need to conform to a very specific monolithic approach? Because the truth is that in an army, you might say that it's very monolithic. You know, everybody dresses the same, and everybody acts the same, and everybody looks the same. So does that mean that's what we're expected to do? So the answer is unequivocally not. First of all, because even in an army, that's not true. So the army has multiple branches. Those different branches have different uniforms. Even within those uniforms, you have fatigues, you have dress uniforms, depending on what you're doing. You know, you see this in Israel. You have different color berets. You can't imagine that an army would be, even though there was a slogan for a while, the U.S. Army, it was called the Army of One. That was a slogan to get people fired up. Obviously, it's not an army of one approach, right? If you had only one branch, even in the ground forces, you have tanks and you have infantrymen, and then you have, you know, ammunition folks. You have all different kinds of people serving in different jobs. So the fact that it's called Tzivos Hashem, that we are in the service in the army of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, does not mean that we're all going to be the same. We're going to have different uniforms, we're going to have different berets, we're going to have different jobs. So that's the first thing. We're going to have different jobs. But that, beyond that, there is a whole nother dimension, which is that there are different drachim. We know that there are different approaches in Avodas Hashem. It's not coincidental that there are 13 gates in the old city of Yerushalayim in the walls. Why are there 13 gates? Because there are 13 approaches. There were 12 tribes and then a miscellaneous tribe. Let's say somebody was a convert. Let's say somebody joined the community. Well, they wouldn't have their own gate. They would go into the what's called the Shar HaKolel, the miscellaneous gate. So everybody had a path. But that meant that if you were from Shevet Yisachar, so you would go into your gate. You wouldn't go into the gate of Shevet Zevulun. And there's a beautiful tradition from a Sefer, an old, old commentary on the Lubavitch Siddur, who says that that means that there actually were, in those days, there were 12 different ways of davening. 12 different Nuschos HaTfilah. And then there was a 13th for the catch-all. That's why in Chabad, they say, well, if you don't know what Shevet you're from, you should daven the catch-all, which they say is Nusach HaRi. So you should all come and join Nusach HaRi unless you know what Shevet you're from. But the idea is that, well, it's okay that there are going to be different people playing different roles, even beyond the individual role. So, yeah, in the Rabbeinu Shlomo's army, he probably needs people to be living in Kathmandu. I suspect that's what the Rebbe was trying to tell his people, to tell the Lubavitch followers, that there need to be people everywhere. But that's not the only way of looking at it. That's not the only gate. We don't all need to become shluchim on a mountaintop in Nepal. We need to figure out, and this is part of our life journey, we need to figure out where do we fit in this big map of Tzivos Hashem, individually, but also communally. We need a part of our community to say, we're Torah only. That's what we do. We're Torah only. That's great, and that's very important, and we should continue to encourage and support that component of our community. But we also need a component of our community that says, well, there's not just Torah only, there's Torah and. And you could fill it in, whether it's Torah and Derech Eretz, Torah and football, Torah and Mada, there's different hashkafas. But the point is that there are different avenues in this Tzivos Hashem, not just on a personal level, but also on a communal level. So it's not that we should walk out and say, you know, Rav Olbis said we all need to agree on one approach to the Rabbeinu Shlomo, and that's the way it's going to be. There's no other way. On the contrary, we need to, if everyone figure out, well, what group are we a part of? And how do we make sure that we as individuals and our group is serving that purpose? You know, the kolel represents a very specific identity that we're very proud of in terms of how we connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's something that we need to continue to be proud of and something that we need to share with others. But it has to be in the context of the Tzivos Hashem. If the banner of your Judaism is Judaism light or Judaism on compromise, so then that's not Tzivos Hashem. You're not really serving anything. You're not really prepared to make those sacrifices. What we need to have is a banner that says Tzivos Hashem, and this is our flag. This is our color. It's not coincidental that in the Midbar, every tribe had a different degel. They had a different banner that communicated what they were all about. Let's say for our community, for example, Rav Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha, he would have said, you know, it's not Torah with compromises or Torah and less. He would have said it's Torah and more. Because you have to have a full commitment to halacha and a full commitment to Torah. And in addition to that, you can also find the spiritual value in various aspects of society, of the world, of general knowledge, of culture, of aspects that can be redeemed. That's a tall order, but it's all with the focus on being part of Tzivos Hashem. If you lose that focus, then you can easily forget what the core mission is about. Yeah.
Do you think Rav Olbi is saying this because he believes that the level of Judaism, in order to achieve this level, you want to be either giving up personal sacrifice, or if it's because of actual action of serving God as opposed to keeping the mitzvah. Like, what is his reasoning for believing that there have to be two different levels? That is it because he wants us to experience the level of personal sacrifice, or is it because he wants us to experience the level of the action of servicing God, and this is how he believes we're doing it?
It's a good question. I'm not sure. I'm also not even so clear on myself where the first level and the second level meet. But what I do know is that, at least to me, this piece speaks very loudly. It speaks very clearly to me. Rav Soloveitchik was very much into the world of sacrifice. Like, if he would have, the Rav Soloveitchik, I doubt, would have written in this way. But the idea of vitur, that is one word that captures a very important article that Rav Soloveitchik wrote called Catharsis. That article is very intense. Do not read that article if you're like looking for a chill 5 minutes for yourself. That's a very intense article. And he talks about the idea of catharsis and the idea of sacrifice and surrender. Rav, he was everything. He was amazing. But he must have been uptight at times because he's so into this whole, like, he has such angst. You know, he's talking about, and he obviously is reflecting, I think people point out, in his own autobiographical note, his wife passed away right before Purim. She died on Tanis Esther. So he describes there what it means to surrender. So he talks about emotional surrender. And in that vein, he talks about, imagine a person who lost their spouse or a loved one right before a yontif. Imagine someone, I know a close friend of mine, had to bury a family member on Erev Pesach. So they had about 5 minutes of Shiva, and then they had to sit down to the Seder. And the Pasuk says, V'samachta b'chagecha. Right? What does that look like? What kind of surrender is that? Or a couple that's looking to consummate their marriage, and then the wife finds out that she's a nida. Or, you know, an intellectual surrender. So the Rav talks about a lot the idea of surrender. So that idea of sacrifice and surrender is something that we don't like to talk about today. Because nobody, it's not a big seller out there to say, celebrate, be proud of Orthodox Judaism because you have to surrender every 5 minutes to the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But at the end of the day, if we don't talk about that, then we're not really serious about Judaism. Because it's true, it is about sacrifice. It is about surrender. But that's not the only thing that it's about. Right, it's about surrender, but it's also about exploring our identity and being proud of being in the service of something greater. If all we sell our kids, if all we tell them is, you have to make sacrifices every day of your life. You can't eat this, and before you eat that, you have to make a bracha, and then you have to check, you know, you're making their lives miserable. If that's all we're selling is sacrifice. But if what we're selling is sacrifice in the context of a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's so much more meaningful and so much more powerful, and these sacrifices are actually to help you, you know, they tell you in the army that you have to get up on time so that when a bomb falls, you'll be prepared. They're not telling it to you for their health. They're telling it because they want you to succeed. So then that's a whole other conversation. But it's predicated on the idea that we have to face the facts. We have to be prepared to say, yeah, we have to make sacrifices. And what do those sacrifices mean? And sometimes those sacrifices call for lifestyle changes that some people are prepared to make and some people are not prepared to make them. But even if you're not prepared to make them, there's a difference between saying, you know what, I'm not there yet. I'm not holding by that, versus saying, you know, we don't really stand for that. And to me, that's what the meaning is. I'm not sure what Revolbi himself meant. But I think that as part of our community, we need to come back to this idea. The idea that we are part of the Tzivos Hashem, we are serving Hashem in our lives, and that means on an individual level, we have to make the sacrifices that are required to create that meaningful service, but it also means we have to be proud. We have to feel good that when somebody knows that we are an Ovid Hashem, that we are in the service of Kadosh Baruch Hu, we feel great about that. We don't feel that that's a drag, we feel that that's a badge of honor. And if we don't, that's a simen ra. It's a bad sign if a person doesn't feel proud of their Judaism. That means that something is wrong, right? Isn't that an indication that something is going wrong? And we need to figure that out for ourselves. Why am I not in the mood? It could be that I have some personal issue. You know, sometimes you see people, that are not excited about their Judaism. It could be that there's something serious going on that they need to explore. It could be they had some kind of tragedy in their life. And you know what? Maybe at this time, their expression of their sense of self is such that, you know, that's the difficult time they're going through. But that's okay. That's part of self-awareness as part of this journey. But I think it's also true on a communal level that we need to know as a community that we are part of the Tzivos Hashem. But at the same time, it doesn't mean we need to all become Lubavitch. But we need to figure out what are we, what do we stand for, what are the sacrifices that we need to make, and therefore what should we be proud of, and how do we live up to that on a communal level. It's a tall task, but you got to start one day at a time. So today's Monday. Let's see how it goes. All right, have a great day, everyone. Thank you for coming.